Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I am here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler. And today, we're talking about how we can help our kids manage their lives and balance their time. I know for myself, having raised a child that has dyslexia and ADD, and personally being someone who has definite weaknesses that balance out my strengths when it comes to organizing and time management, I was so excited that we finally found an expert in this field. And she comes from this place of personal experience, and her business, kind of like ours, Sandy, it grew out of her success in helping kids and their parents find solutions that work.
Exactly, Judy. I have been looking for someone who could help us with team time management for quite a while because stress relief and priorities and time management are where I started coaching, but I was doing it for moms and for women. So the teen area wasn't necessarily my strength, but it made me really picky about who we'd be working with.
You picky? Yet. No.
Yeah, and you know, again, too, I have a family that has a couple people who are neurodiverse. Executive functioning skills are not their strong point. And so we, too, have had to do things out of the norm. And that's where our guest comes from. Her name is Leslie Josel, and she's just what we're looking for. She is an academic and life coach, an award-winning author and internationally acclaimed speaker whose business, Order Out of Chaos, was born out of personal experience and a personal mission. After she helped her teen son, who was diagnosed with ADHD, create order in his world, other people started asking her to help their families. So she did in a big way. And now she is a respected resource on ADHD and executive functioning in students. She writes a weekly column for ADDitude or Attitude magazine and is a contributing writer for Family Circle magazine, amongst everything else she does. She wrote the book Teens in Time Management and created a student planner specifically for organizingly challenged teens, and she has many resources for families. So Leslie, as you can tell, we're very excited to have you on the show.
Oh my God. I'm so happy to be here because I love talking to people who get it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're kindred spirits.
Exactly. I think all of us come from that place of let's find the action steps that we move forward. And it kind of leads us to our first question, because I want to know from you, Leslie, what are the biggest problems you see in the way teens typically manage their time, or I should say try to manage their time?
Well, if I can wrap it back just a little bit before we get into what we see teens doing, I have to really talk to the parent first. Because as much as I'm all about, and if you go on my site, I'm all about tips and tools and resources and action, I do like to give a little bit of a setup so that there's a bit of a mindset understanding about when you are dealing with teens. And I'm going to do this super quickly, but it's really important for your listeners to understand that if they have a student at home, I call them students, not children. That's just how I speak. But if you have a student that has any type of time management challenges or deficiencies, it's brain-based behavior. So, and our brains all develop at very different speeds. So if you have a 16-year-old at home, or you have a 13-year-old at home, or you have a 19-year-old at home, they might be those ages in all other areas of their life, academically, athletically, socially, but when it comes to any type of brain-based challenge, like time management, they're going to be 30% less their chronological age in that deficiency. That's called an executive age. So if you have a 13-year-old at home and they are time-managed deficient, they will be 9. and what you expect from that nine-year-old, how you will support that nine-year-old, how you'll scaffold that is very different than what you would do for a 13-year-old. We know that. Like, how you treat your nine-year-old is different. So when I tell parents that, that is like a massive, like, drop mic. Oh my gosh, she's like, I don't want to hear that, because I get in my practice every day, I get the question, my kid is 13 or my kid is 16. How come they can't do blank? Right? How come they can't wake up on time? Or how come they can't, you know, manage their time? So I really think it's really critical to just kind of lay out that framework first, that you are not, if you're seeing deficiency in time management with your teen, they're not necessarily the age that they are chronologically.
So just, I need to dig in this just a little bit to make sure that we're understanding. So you're saying that there are expectations based on age in 100%. General, but if your teen is challenged in this, and this is what I want to dig into, like, how do we know if they're challenged versus uncooperative, or you know, how do you know that it is a good idea, it is not only reasonable, it is in your child's best interest for you to roll back those expectations 30% of their chronological age.
Okay. So you exactly hit the nail on the head with understanding what executive age is. It's that there's an expectation that parents have that at a certain age, your child should be able to do certain things. And if you're looking at something brain-based, they might not be able to do it. There's a great, you know, we talk a lot about that kids know what to do, but can't do what they know. And that is how I think a parent knows best in every form. You know, my son was 5, he was diagnosed, and I knew, you know, I would walk into every appointment going, I'm not at A where I believe nothing you're telling me, but I'm not at Z where I believe everything. I'm at M. I know exactly, you know, what's real and what's not. You know, you live with that child, you get a sense of what is either defiant behavior or, you know, just I don't give a you know what behavior versus really not being able to do what it is you need them to do. So if you are truly supporting that child, and that goes back to my whole, like, you have to support your child where they live. You've got to meet them where they're having those issues. So if your child is having a hard time, like, seeing time, let's say you've got to be, and we can go into the weeds a little bit more. I'm just talking high level right now, mm-hmm. but you know, and you put in the right type of supports for that child and they're still having a hard time remembering or figuring it out or understanding, then I'm going to err on the side of your child is really having, you know, those types of issues. The other thing is you're going to play a little I spy.
Actually, Leslie, I'm going to interrupt you because
sure.
My brain is stuck back at a term that you used called seeing time. And I don't know that we all okay. necessarily know what that means. So, I couldn't hear anything else you said when I was like,
okay, no, that's a good point. And I'm sorry. I'm so,
it's like, okay.
I'm so into like, this is mine that I do need to be stopped every now and then. So no, I do to explain what I mean.
Seeing that's what time, we're here for.
Right. Seeing time is actually a very simple, it can be as simple as hanging analog clocks all over your house. So that you see time. There is.
What does it mean when the child can't see time? I don't know what that means.
Means if you are using words, and again, it's going to depend on how old your child is. I mean, they're, you know, a child who's 13, there will be different expectations. And this is just in life, if your child is 18. But if your child doesn't know their schedule, doesn't know how long something takes them to do, doesn't know how long it takes them to get somewhere, you know what I'm saying? That's
yes.
seeing time. That's being yes. time aware. Maybe time aware is a better way to say it. Your child is not being supported with ways that they can be time aware. How long does it take me to get to school in the morning? How much time do I need? If there's just an expectation that my kid just knows that, well, that could be where that's where the, you know, where it's not coming together. Is that making sense?
It does. And, you know, I think back to my child, my son, when he was younger, and those were the kind of things that were really prevalent. My kids are literally 14 months apart, and my daughter could see time, and she knew exactly how much things took, and she was really easy to do. And my son we'd say do the X, Y, and Z, he might get one done, but exactly. It would take him 10 times longer, and he would be really sad because he didn't understand why we thought he should be doing more, because he was doing the best he could. And those were indicators. So if I'm hearing you right, it's just in our parenting skills.
Exactly.
We see the difference in how our kids are acting and reacting to just normal everyday stuff. And that will give us that awareness if they're seeing time.
Exactly.
Or if they're doing it. Okay.
And you just said it the right way too. I think, look, I want to give everybody, all your listeners, a shout out. I mean, if they're on this podcast, they're good parents. You know what I'm saying? Like, they want to do right by their kids. They're intuitive. They're watching. And what we also tend to see as parents is patterns. So where are the issues? So for you, that's a perfect way. You saw a pattern in your child. This was a weakness for them. This was a struggle for them. And it was real. So you knew as a parent that this wasn't your child just being, you know, I hate to use words like this because I don't believe in them. Words like lazy and defiant. Well, I do believe in defiant, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
You weren't seeing that. You know, I get asked a ton, why is my student able to, you know, function in a school setting, whereas they come home and it falls apart? To me, that is a huge indicator of a child who might not be time aware, because in school, they are supported in every minute of the day. They are supported visually with analog clocks in every room ticking down. They know, trust me, kids know when their classes end. That they know, but they see time move. They also are being supported, you know, verbally by a teacher who's saying, okay, you know, class is over, time to move to the next, you know, to the next. They're also being supported in what I call reading the room, where they're watching what other students are doing and saying, okay, I should be packing up my, you know, my knapsack now or my book bag now and moving to the next class. So there's a tremendous amount of structure going on in a school setting that allows the student not to have their own time management going on, but being supported by the environment they're in. I'm hoping that makes a lot of sense to everyone out there.
Yeah. And so I just want to, so we went into this, I took us in this little other direction. So overall, where we're at was saying, okay, there are certain expectations based on chronological age.
Yes.
For kids who have an actual physiological challenge in executive function, we should roll back our expectations 30% of their chronological age. So now everyone who's listening, whether you have, you know, whether your kid is challenged or not, we can all go, okay, here is our expectation. So now I feel like we can all follow you moving forward, talking about all of our teens together.
And your child doesn't have to have an executive, you know, I work with parents and teens all day, every day. And some of them just have time managed deficient. They don't have to have any other type of label, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. They're just time managed. And what the biggest thing that I see overall is that students live in two worlds. This is what I hear from parents. This is even what I see when I'm working with my students. There is the whole thing of, I'm going to try to make this like totally user-friendly, is they live in two worlds, and you can't see me, but they live in like the now, like the right now, like whatever time it is at this moment on this day, that's where their attention is because they're in that specific moment. And then like way, 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 way over there. So I'm in like New York, so figure like in St. Louis, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like way over there is the not now. And, and bridging that, making, and I think this is a term everyone will get, making kids time aware, right? Mm-hmm. Time aware. Just making students time aware, making them understand that time exists past the now. Now, that's a huge sentence. That's not a big generality. Obviously, that comes in different phases and stages, depending on how old your child is, depending on where they sit on the time management continuum. But in many degrees, that is what I see. Even if you have a parent listening with a teen and has a younger child, that whole like, you know, where I am now versus where, you know, where the not now is. And unfortunately, That's where the breakdown is. It is super hard to teach and it is super hard to learn because you have to create, you have to really work with that student to really get them to see past what they're seeing now. They have to, you know, it could be 5 minutes from now. It could be an hour from now. It could be a month from now, even for our older students.
So this is the problem that you see most with kids who are time management challenged. And it's what we're teaching all our kids from, you know, not birth exactly, but we do have parents with toddlers who have contacted us and said, oh my gosh, I know it's a teen show, but this is great. So from the time our kids are little, what we are teaching them slowly is how to bridge now and not now. Is that what you're saying? It's like, that's kind of the core of time management.
Yes. It's okay. I'm thinking that your listeners are kind of, you know, we're seeing lots of like, virtual head bobs going, that's my kid. They don't look past, you know, right now. They don't realize that they have maybe a paper due Monday and they need to get started now, or there's something going on Sunday that they need, you know, it's.
Or we have a wedding to go to this weekend and you need to make sure that you have clothes that are clean. And if I need to take them to the dry cleaner, I need to know it by Tuesday.
Right. And I think you're probably getting a lot of people going, oh, she just described my kid, whether they're, what you said, even if they're not a teen, but that is, because you did ask me at the beginning, what do I see? That's a huge generality. But if I was to drill down what I hear and see and get all day long, that's it. That is the crux of it, is that being time aware. And I preach like morning, noon, and night to anyone who wants to listen, that for your teen to be able to manage time, for your teen to be able to learn time, time's tough because it's not, you can't hold it in your hands. You know what I mean? They need to be able to see it. It's just as, I mean, I think that's a very like simple kind of sentence to say for people to wrap their brain around.
Yeah, you can't see time. And the other thing that's striking me as a parent is parenting is amazing and it's wonderful and it's exhausting. And it's, you think that, you know, you have little ones and you expect to be exhausted because you're not going to sleep. You don't expect that exhaustion is just going to take on different forms as they grow. And I think this time management piece is at least a contributing factor, if not at the core, of a lot of parent exhaustion and conflict. So I'm loving that you are giving us, I guess, a real perspective to work from, so we can restructure our expectations of what our kids are doing. And of course, we're going to get into hounding you about, you know, some ideas for, okay, how do we teach this, whether they're challenged or not, because we all have to learn it.
No, we all have to learn it, and we all have to learn. And again, I'm going to keep going back to this because it is time management is, this is where I put my coach hat on, but you know, my expert hat on, you know, it is a brain-based behavior. So your child is going to get to it, on their own, but they will get to it, I think, faster or quicker or in a better way. If they're supported. One of my favorite things, and I'm not disparaging parents, trust me, I am one and I am guilty as charged, but you know, how many times does your child walk out of the house? And I call it the, oh, by the ways, you know what I mean? Like we say like, oh, by the way, oh, by the ways, and don't forget. That's like how I label it, because how many times is your kid halfway out the door and you're going, oh, by the way, and don't forget. And there's an expectation from you that they're actually hearing you and that they're actually going to do whatever it is you went, oh, by the way, and don't forget. So we also as parents need to learn a different language. We need to learn how to speak to our kids to actually help them with any type, not even just time management, but with these brain-based behaviors. So I'm happy to go into the weeds with you on that. I think we all kind of have to chuckle a little and go, oh my God, I do that all the time. Oh, by the way, don't forget, really asking your child, how are you going to remember what I just said to you?
So I'm all about, give me an example right now, because I need to understand. So I am one of those people that when my kids were in high school, I was a, don't forget, this is going on after school. Don't forget, I'm picking you up at 3:00. And they wouldn't be at the door at 3.
Of course.
So we are all so busy. And oftentimes we, at the last minute, remember something. As parents, how can we build our toolbox so that we can change that languaging, so that we can actually give them the tools they need to be able to distinguish between the now and not now?
Okay. So it's not, it's as you said, it's not an easy, to your point, it's not an easy fix, and we are busy. But on the other hand, and this is where I have to, like, as I say, lay down the Leslie Law. Okay. Because I do, if you've ever heard me speak on my webinar, that I call it the Leslie Law. Like, you know, yes, we're busy, but we spend a lot of time teaching our kids how to play soccer. We teach our kids, spend a lot of time teaching our kids how to, you know, drive a car. We need to spend time doing this as well. These are life skills, not just school skills. And, you know, if you've ever, if we can really get real, you know, no one's going to give a you-know-what your kid got on his, like, you know, I say this in my book, on your on their Mesopotamia test in ninth grade. They're just not going to. But if your child does not know how to get to his job on time or hand in a paper on time, trust me, those things will come back to haunt them. Those are the life skills that they need. So there's things that you can do right away that are little, and then there are things that take, I think, a lot longer to work at. But one of my, like, favorite tools, which people kind of chuckle at, is going back to the seeing time thing, and is hanging clocks. And I know we are, like, in digital, you know, we are in digital worlds. Half of us don't wear watches anymore. We're all on the phones, or we just have kitchen timers that possibly, or microwave timers that tell us. But those do not give us a full, accurate view of time. If you look at a digital clock, all it does is give you one time, and that's present. It doesn't let you see time move. So right off the bat, I don't care if your kid is 8 or 18, you need to be hanging an analog clock. And I'm assuming everyone here knows what an analog clock is. You'd be surprised. Not everybody does.
The old face clocks.
Old face clocks. Why do they have them in schools, in every classroom? There is a reason for it. How does your child know how to track time in school? Because he stares at an analog clock every single day and watches his time move. I've got 3 minutes left to hear Mrs. Smith talk about Mesopotamia. You know what I mean? So you've got to do the same. There has to be a clock in every room of your house that your child spends time in, including the bathroom, and especially the bathroom, particularly if you have a teen. Sorry, I get very real when I talk.
Oh, so, we had a clock. It wasn't analog, but we had a clock in our bathroom. I need one.
Right. But it should be analog.
Yeah.
Because your child really needs to see his time move. Because you're going to, if you, particularly if you're younger, you know, you have to start the dialogue. And I know there are people listening who have kids younger than teens. But, you know, what, you know, when my kids were little, the conversation was, what happens in 15 minutes from now? Can you tell, like, it was asking them those questions. Do you know what 15 minutes from now is? Where are we going 15 minutes from now? What do you need to do in 15 minutes, in 10 minutes? You know, what, or, and if your kid is really little, you know, can you show me even on the clock what 10 minutes looks like? But that's for much younger kids. But our teens definitely have some sense of time, but they need to be able to see it in every aspect of where they are to be able to get them to intuitively move to the next thing.
All right. So I got two little things there from you, Leslie, and I just want to make sure I didn't miss something. So I got hang clocks around the house. We want analog clocks so they can see time move, and especially make sure there's one in the bathroom. And then ask them, the only question I got from here, so I'd love a few more questions, is ask what happens 15 minutes from now.
But it could be anything from, so I like to use it for me, like I, for older students, so it doesn't sound like, you know, she's asking me, like, I'm 14 and she's asking me what happens 15 minutes from now. I like to use, I know you read this, I like to ask what's your plan. I think what's your plan to some degree is a much softer question, but what it is doing for your student or child is it's getting them to start putting in their own head either a visual timetable, a visual clock, or a visual routine. because when you start, you know, I have to wrap this back for 1 minute, just 1 minute, just give me 1 second to explain this so that your listeners go, okay, I know where she's going with this. Your brain is a muscle like every other muscle in your body. And just like every other muscle in your body, it needs to be exercised. And if you as the parent are the one calling the shots to your child, meaning go here at this time, go there at this time, we're leaving in 15 minutes, don't forget to get your water bottle, don't forget to get your soccer bag, get in the car, 5 more minutes. The only brain that is being exercised is yours. Your child's brain is not doing any heavy lifting. It's not getting stronger. And the way we exercise a brain is by asking it questions. So you got to flip that switch and start asking, what's your plan if you have a younger, what's your plan when you walk in the door after school? What's your plan after dinner? What's your plan after your shower? Or if you have an older student, what's your plan to get that paper written because we're going to grandma's for the weekend? You know, like what you're doing, and then this goes, wraps us all the way back to that future awareness, that now and the not now. What you're doing is you're helping them see time. You're helping them see future time. What is your plan when? So all of a sudden their brain is forced to actually think ahead. It's a lot of information.
Oh, but it's great. And here's where I took it back to. And it, I think that this is simply brilliant because it's the same thing we did when they were little. What is this color? What is this number? What right. is this object? All we're going to do now is switch over to time. And that one, you gave us just one question. I can remember one question, and I've actually used that question with my kids for a totally different reason.
Right.
And it did for that situation as well. It worked brilliantly. And now I can see how it also helps them, because I have one who can't see time and one who can see all the time from past to present to, you know, till the end of the world. So, but it just works. It works still with both of them, and it works for better communication. There's so many areas this touches on. And Judy, I feel like I interrupted you. I feel like you had something to say too. So.
Oh, I just was thinking back to parents and modeling. And we, from the time our kids are little, we say 1 minute, 1 minute. And that 1 minute is really 20 minutes, you know. And as my kids got older, they started going, are we talking a real minute or a mom minute? And it's just that concrete example that as parents, we don't always help our kids get to that place where they can see time because we don't give time the respect it deserves. And taking it all back to, how do you time manage when you don't understand what things take and how long they take, or how your time in a specific moment impacts the time of the entire day? As parents, what might be some of the actions that we take that almost negate some of those good things that you're talking about, Leslie?
Oh, I love the whole mom minute, because so I'm going to tell you a funny story, because I like to tell stories because I think people relate to them. So when I work with a student, one of the first things that I do with them is I give them a sheet and I have them tell me how long it takes them to do these things. None of them are school related, mind you. They're more like, if you have a dog, how long does it take you to walk your dog, take a shower, make a... And everyone, I have one girl who basically said 20 minutes to everything. And I said, really? And which also shows me she really has no time awareness. But her answer was, well, it should really take a minute, but this is my mom minute. So it was so interesting that her mom, and it's funny, you use the term mom mm-hmm. minute, and it's exactly what she called it, because she said, you know, I think it should take 5, but with my mother, everything takes 20. So there it is. We are actually sometimes... You know, look, we're not perfect, but it's an interesting way that our kids look at time too when it comes to us. I do want to share something, because I am sure that there are listeners out there going, well, how the heck, excuse me, do I teach my kid time management if I'm having trouble with my own?
Exactly.
You get that? I get that a lot. And it is not the easiest nut to crack, but I have this one family that I work with, and I work with the parent and the mother as well as the student. And what the mom has done is she talks everything out loud. So she said it works for her to be able to walk through her time management, but she said that it actually really helps her daughter, it's actually a daughter who I work with, who, hear her process. So for example, she picks up her husband every night at the train station and she'll say, oh, dad's train gets in at 6:30. We live 15, you know, we live 10 minutes away. So I have to leave the house by da da da. And she works it out in her own brain. And how am I going to remember to get him? That's another whole story. I'm going to set the kitchen timer. And the daughter has said to me that listening to her mother do that is actually by osmosis. Sometimes things are just, you know, we model behavior. It doesn't always have to be take a pan and crack her kid over the head to learn something. But she said that has helped her more than a lot of what I'm trying to teach her. Because hearing her mother just go through the, okay, I'm going to drive you at 4, then it's going to take me 10 minutes to go pick up your brother, then I'm going to go. And she said that type of self-talk has helped her do self-talk and create future awareness, create those time routines. So I just thought that was a really nice thing to maybe say to those listening, mm-hmm. to give them another tip.
I like that. And unfortunately, we are out of time for today. So I just want to go back and hit a couple of the high points. Sure. Fortunately, it's a podcast, so everybody can just go back and listen over, because even I, who is not time challenged at all, there's so much here, I feel like I'm drinking from a fire hose. So a couple of big things are that as parents, we need to understand that there are reasonable expectations based on age. And even though we are excited for our kids to get better time management skills, we need to keep it age appropriate. And if we have a student at home who has any time management challenges, we need to roll back those expectations 30% of their chronological age.
Yes.
We also need to remember that this is brain-based, and so part of the solution for it is to exercise our brain just like we exercise any muscles. So adjust our expectations, let our kids exercise this. Don't figure everything out for them. Ask them questions, which you told us, you know, the great question for our teens is, what's your plan? And then mm-hmm. put in the when. What's your plan after school? What's your plan after dinner? Or the why. What's your plan to get your paper written? What's your plan to get those college applications done? What's your plan
exactly.
for a job as you're graduating from college or for a summer job? And then, couple tips are, one, hang analog clocks, the old face clocks around the house so kids can see time move. As Judy pointed out, as parents, we need to give time the respect it deserves and speak of it accurately. And another tip from you, Leslie, was if we are challenged with time ourselves, okay, as we're learning that, let our kids see us learn it. Speak out loud, learn it in front of them so they can learn along with us. And there's so much more here, Leslie.
Could you please tell
listeners where they can find you to get sure. more access to your resources?
Okay, so the name of my company is Order Out of Chaos. Our website is orderoochaos.com. Or they can just Google Leslie at Order Out of Chaos and they will find us. We have so much going on our site. We give classes and webinars and tutorials on everything from time management to organization to procrastination and everything in between for both students and parents. We didn't even get into academic planners or just planning your time, but that's
I'll be back.
But another big reason, we actually have a division called Products Designed with Students in Mind. And social is big for us too. We do a lot on our social media accounts that we don't do online. So just go to our site and you will be able to find us in any place that works for you.
Thank you so much, Leslie. That was such an incredible interview. I know that we're going to have you back. But right now, it is almost time to dig into Real Talk, where we are discussing what to do if you see a teen who might be struggling or in distress or heading down the road where they might be in trouble. And we're going to do that right after this quick message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Welcome back. It's time for Real Talk, where Judy and I dig into all kinds of topics that parents need to deal with. And one of the things that happens is we see other kids, and sometimes other people can see our kids and we can see other people's kids more clearly than their own parents can. And as we're going about our lives, we're interacting with a lot of people and a lot of different kids, whether it's our nieces and nephews or our neighbors' kids or our kids' friends. And sometimes we'll look at those kids, we'll look at a teen and see that, you know, they're struggling or they're in trouble or they're heading for trouble. There might be signs that they're dealing with depression or severe anxiety. You might think or see that they're drinking, using drugs, or maybe we know that they're taking risks and causing trouble. I know when I speak at DASIM events, and Judy, you can tell me, but I'm sure you get the same kind of questions, people will ask what they should do when they see something like this. They're like, should I tell the parents? Will they even listen to me? Are they going to get mad at me? What do I do about this?
Absolutely. You know, last week I was at an event where we were kind of talking about what is the problem going on? Why is there such a spike in depression, addiction, and even suicide ideation? And instantly hands went up and said, what do I do? You know, back in the day, I think back to when we were young, Sandy, and I know that when I was doing something, my neighbors or my mom's friends were the first people to call my mom. I remember the first time I ever skipped school and we went to the mall. And literally by the time I got home, my mom knew where I had been all day long because little neighbors everywhere called her up and said, Pat, Judy is here with her friend. She's not at school. And that concept of it takes a village was so true. And I knew that people would tell my parents if something was going on. And they wouldn't hesitate to parent me in that moment even. I got yelled at by my friend's parents regularly because I did something inappropriate. But I think things have shifted now. We as a culture are so afraid to say anything about someone else's child. And yeah, I think it does a disservice to us.
I do too. And the thing is that the main reason we're afraid is we're afraid there will be backlash. And I'm not saying there won't be, because unfortunately that's where we've gone. As a society in general, and obviously isn't true for every parent in every situation, but in general, parents have become very defensive about their kids. And if anybody says anything, the first thing is to erect these walls. And especially if someone comes and says, hey, you know, your kid's in trouble. And especially if you get into more sensitive things like seeing something like depression or addiction or drinking and drugs, you know, some of those can be very touchy for people. And so I know that when people ask me, the only thing I can really answer is what I would do. And so my response to, you know, the parents, the medical people, everybody who asks me about this is I say that, you know, I understand that there may be backlash. I understand that these parents might be angry at me. I understand that, you know, it could be a friend. I could lose that friend over it, or it could be a family member and it could cause some kind of a rift in the family. But if a child, whether they're a teenager or younger or older, but if a child is in danger, they're in pain, or they are at risk, I have to share that with their parents. And I will do that, and I'm willing to deal with the fallout, because what I'm not willing to deal with is the fallout that happens because I didn't say something. Mm-hmm. Because even if the parents don't want to hear it, even if they're angry about it, they have heard it and they know. And this brings back, Judy, both of our kids have said different things. So Jeffrey has said, when we speak at events for Dacium, where we actually do speak about depression, addiction, suicide prevention, we teach healthy coping strategies and things. And we will get, it's kind of some backlash. We will get attitude from some of the kids. And you and I at the beginning had a hard time with that, because we felt we didn't reach them. And what Jeffrey taught us is, no, we did reach them. They just aren't ready to fully accept it in that moment. But they heard it. They can't unhear it. And they will eventually get there. So that's one thing. If you tell a parent they've heard it, they can't unhear it, and hopefully they will get there. My daughter had a situation where she had a friend at college who was saying some things and doing some things that made my daughter think there was a chance this girl could attempt suicide. And she herself struggled with it, you know, during that day. And she just decided that, yeah, she might lose that friend if she tells campus safety about it, but she'd rather not have the friendship and have the girl alive. And so that's kind of where I come back to, is whatever the problem is, whether it's, you know, bigger or smaller, I can live with the fallout of somebody being upset with me. I can't live with the fallout of a kid starting down a horrible path or having something terrible happen to them. Does that make sense, Jude?
No, it does. And I think that it's all about how you deliver the message. I don't think that it is... In this whole concept of we need to become a community, I know that is really, really important for us here at Mighty Parenting, because it does take a community. We're dealing with higher stakes now than ever before. We are dealing with situations, whether it be from school shootings to 13 Reasons Why to games on the, you know, that they play the shoot 'em up games or school shooting, all those things. The stakes are life and death now. And I think that as a community and as a culture, we need to shift back into that place of how can we support one another as parents and not be judgmental of the way each other parent. Because no one, I think back to, I keep going back to the olden days when we grew up, but my mom never felt like they were attacking her parenting. And where did that shift take place? I don't know if I could ever answer that question. Maybe you can. But there is a shift that happened that went, if someone's talking about my children, they're judging my parenting. And I think that is so wrong. It's not true for the majority of the time.
So can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Because there are two things, but that, what I heard you just saying is we moved from an adult talking to another parent, saying something about a kid. We moved from that being supporting you as a parent mm-hmm. to attacking you as a parent.
Absolutely.
And that's just wisdom. I'm like, that makes a lot of sense to me. And the other thing is, I just want to make sure, because I love what you're saying, but you said that it's all in how you deliver the message. And you're so good at this and so much better than I am, because I tend to be a very direct person. So I want to make sure that you get to where you give us some ideas or some words that we can start with if we need to approach another parent.
Exactly. And, you know, there aren't the perfect words, but in general, we want to be non-judgmental and coming from a place of concern, right? Because that's the important thing. We're concerned about there. So we need to figure out ways to convey that concern. And we do that by being factual, authentic, and letting them know you care. So those things are so important. For example, if you just have a broad or general concern about a kid that you've known for a while, right? You could say something like, do you have a minute? You know that I've known Johnny since our kids were in soccer together a few years ago. And I'm concerned because I've noticed changes in not only how he's reacting to his friends, but how he's dressing and just his general joy in life. It's really shifted. Have you seen that same thing?
Oh, I like that.
Not about digging in saying, there's something wrong with your kid, da da da. It's, have you noticed? And this is what I've observed. Factual, caring, and authentic.
And what I'm hearing too is, that's it. We don't have to solve the problem.
Right.
We don't have to fix it. All we're doing is carefully and kindly bringing it to the attention of the other parent. And right. So tell me how this goes, if this makes sense then in, you know, in that softer, kinder world. So let's say that, let's say that you see my daughter, Emma, out with kids and she's drinking and you come to me and you could do, you know, hey, Sandy, do you have a minute? You know, I've known Emma since she was born and I saw her out doing something that just doesn't seem like her. I saw her and some other kids out and they were drinking and that just doesn't seem like Emma. And I didn't know if, you know, if you knew that that kind of thing had been happening.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get it? Or do I need to fix it?
It's not needing to fix it. It's that you were concerned, you gave facts, and you said, I just want to make sure, you know, that you're aware that this is going on. You weren't saying, did you know Emma was out drinking with all of those roughhouse kids down there? No. The way you brought it up was, I've known her since, and this changed. Such a different feeling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things. So another huge example that I get a lot when I'm out there is your child comes home and they share that their friend has been talking about suicide or self-harm or exhibiting major signs of depression. So what do you say? You know, you definitely want to contact the parent. Like you said, better safe than sorry. And that's how I always tell people, if you are concerned, better safe than sorry. That's like line in the sand. But Sandy, I wanted to come to you directly because I'm worried about Emma. My daughter came home to me and shared that they were at a party and Emma was doing shots with all these guys and just wasn't acting like herself. And my daughter was worried and didn't really know how to breach the subject. So I'm kind of here to help her. Just opening up that conversation and making sure the other parent is aware, and then just being there and responding to their questions. Like you said, it's not about fixing. It's not about taking over their parental responsibility, but if there's an issue and they're just becoming aware, they may have questions and you can answer them or just direct them to us or some other resource in the area and we can connect that. So the words aren't as important as really the tone and the feeling behind the message.
And Jude, I know this is, it feels a little like a tangent, but I also feel like there was a stopper in here for a lot of parents. And that was, in that last example, I totally love the way you said it. I also know there are a lot of kids who would feel that I threw them under the bus. You know, if my daughter comes home and says, you know, I saw so-and-so at this party doing this kind of thing, mom, you can't tell her mom. How can I have that conversation with the parent, still with that care and concern, everything like you said, but without telling them my daughter said this to me?
Exactly. So with that one, it would have been, I would have said that example if my child came to me and said, mom, I don't know what to do. Can you help me? Okay. Mm-hmm. So backing to the point that you're making is my child doesn't want them to know it was her.
Right.
Then you can literally just say what I said in my first example. I've noticed these changes. You don't need to give the, she was at a party drinking, but I've noticed these changes and wondered if she was doing anything that you're concerned about. It's just opening up that window, open up the curtains and say, it's time to focus in because I'm seeing changes. And the other thing too is I believe that if our kids come to us, the conversation needs to be had of, I think we need to go to the parent. I know you don't want to say that you told me. However, it is really critical that we give the facts so that we can get your friend help. And it may make things harder, but you, like you said, you don't want to have your child dealing with the suicide of a friend either. So I tend to, and I know we differ a little bit on this, I tend to be, let's talk to our kids and have our kids be part of the process and explaining them why. And our kids can be part of that conversation. I don't know if I answered that question very well, but
And it's nuances. I mean, there's a difference between it was a kid who was at a party and they had a drink, and there's a kid who's exhibiting concerning behavior. And I think that's where that difference comes in.
Yeah.
Because a kid who was at a party who had a drink one time, I'd want to know. Okay, so I would appreciate any other parent telling me, and I would not throw the parent under the bus. I'd like to know. However, if my kid came to me and said, I'm worried about this friend, because they're going to be worried about more than one thing. Mm-hmm. So as you said, there will be other behaviors, other things that we can talk about. And yes, I agree that I would have the discussion with my child and say, hey, this is how I see this. This is how I feel about it. You know, I can live with this. It will be unpleasant, but I can't live with this. But I would still give them the choice of being part of that or not. And they are kids. They may not have the chutzpah yet to actually say, yes, I'm willing to actually go to the parent and say this. And I'm okay with that. And I'm happy to take the fall for it, you know, and be the guy who goes and does it with or without them. I give them credit for even coming to me with it. That's a huge step. So I like that advice. I think that is really useful, and I think it's great.
Well, and I think that thinking over it after, you know, taking a minute as you were talking just to think, we don't want to throw our kids under the bus. But if we're going to change the narrative and really become a village and empowering our kids with that knowledge so that as they grow up and have their own children, that they aren't continuing this judgment thing of other parents, we need to bring them into the conversation. And it's really about helping them. What are the words you could say? Maybe when they came to me about their friend drinking at the party, I would have first said, have you talked to them about what you feel? Go to your friend and say, you know, I saw you drinking on Friday. What's up with that? And encourage them and coach them on words to say, to talk to their friend first. And if they continue to see the behavior, you know, the minute a kid does something, you don't want your child going straight to their parents or you going straight to their parents and creating a problem that isn't there. But if your child tries to handle it with their friend, that would be step one. And if that doesn't work and behavior continues to escalate, that's when I would go with the, I wanted to come to you directly because I'm worried about Johnny. there's been multiple situations about some of the stuff that's going on, and I'm concerned. So your kids, I think that's a better way, you know, if I could backtrack and rewind what I said, coach your kids on talking to their friends first, and then if things escalate or get more worrisome, then you may need to step in as a parent and have that conversation with the other parent. But you'll have more ammunition to do so.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so great discussion. Not always easy, but terrific. And thanks so much, everyone, for joining us for this episode. If you like what you heard today, be sure to like, subscribe, comment, and share. If it's your first time listening, we want to welcome you to the Mighty Parenting Community, because we are more than just a podcast. We are a community that supports one another as we raise our teens and parent young adults. So you can join us on all the different areas that we have in our Facebook group and other things. Just go to mightyparenting.com and choose the things that work for you. Until next time, this is Sandy Fowler. I'm here with Judy Davis, and we thank you for listening and joining us in becoming a mighty parent.